This is URN Sport.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Sports Centre here on URN Sport. We did say we were going to make this a weekly thing, so of course it's been 3 weeks since our last episode. The curse of URN Sport promises strikes again, but we are back to talk about all things, all the major sports, I should say, other than football. And believe me, there has been plenty going on in the world of sports over the last few weeks. And to help us dissect and discuss it a little bit further, I'm joined by April, Cam, Benji and Reese. Look, I think it's fair to say the major sporting event of the last fortnight or so has been the Six Nations. It's back, and believe me, it is probably bigger and better than ever as well. Only two sides are unbeaten so far in the tournament. France, who've recorded victories against Italy and Ireland, and Wales, who've recorded victories against Ireland and Scotland. Cam, I'll turn to you first, mate. Is it fair to say that France have been the most impressive side in the tournament so far?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that. They really impressed me on the back of the Autumn Nations at the end of last year, which I think this put them in good stead for this competition. They've got a real good squad depth, especially considering the strike action and stuff that happened with the national team last year. And so, yeah, I think they are very, very, very interesting to watch. And I expect them to be closer to the top of the table come the end of the Six Nations. And that said, they have also played Italy. And I know they try to become more competitive every year, but they are probably the least competitive team in this competition. So I think until they play some of the big boys like Wales and potentially Scotland as well, I think are outsiders for this tournament. I think once they've come through a couple of those tests, we can definitely consider them proper candidates.
Well, we're going to talk in a little bit more detail about Italy in a moment. But April, from the bits that you've seen of the Six Nations so far, what has impressed you the most about this French team? Because, you know, Cam refers to the victory against Italy there, 50 points to 10. Wasn't much of a test for them. But that tight victory against Ireland last weekend, 15 points to 13, they showed quite a lot of character to win that game. What characteristics have impressed you the most?
Well, I think they have improved a lot defensively. I think they've got a fairly new defensive coach, so that's really helped them. But they just seem to work well together as a team. They had like quite a good game plan from what I could tell. And they seem to be like using a lot of offloads, especially nearer to the sort of try, to get to tries. And I think they just managed the game a lot better than Ireland did. I mean, Ireland, I kind of support them a bit as sort of a second team to England. And I've sort of been a bit disappointed because Ireland haven't played too badly, but they still end up with two losses. And I wouldn't say that's necessarily like not Ireland's fault, like it is some mistakes by Ireland, and especially getting the red in the first game wasn't exactly a very good thing. But France on this weekend, I thought were really impressive. And like Cam said, I can see France being a real contender to win the whole Six Nations.
Conversely, and April mentioned a team there that had a very difficult start to the competition. Ireland and Italy haven't won a match so far in this tournament. Italy haven't won a Six Nations game since 2015 versus Scotland. So it's been a hell of a long time since the Italians recorded a victory in the competition. And after their defeat to France in the opening match of the tournament, Cam, there was talk after the match about, you know, Italy's future in the competition, should the Six Nations continue to be made up of six teams, considering, you know, how poor Italy have been in the last few years. Where do you stand on that argument? Do you think the competition needs to be rebranded and reshaped and Italy need to be taken out of it? Because, you know, it seems like year on year, they are, you know, the team that are destined for the wooden spoon. And it doesn't look like that's going to change anytime soon.
Yeah, I think I think the Six Nations as a brand has been so successful for such a long time, but they reach a point where it can become a bit stagnant. And I think to be innovative and to try and attract new watchers, new viewers, and everything like that, I think adding a team that's a lot more competitive in replace of Italy, I don't think would be a bad thing. And I think to trial something similar to that would be a great option to have. I'm unsure as to who you'd bring in. I think that's the biggest question. There's a lot of kind of, I don't know. I think well, I'd compare them to the level of Scotland maybe 3 or 4 years ago, in terms of there's a lot of teams around that level floating or floating around Europe. And if you then try to bring in other nations, like you could change the tournament completely, and rather than be home nations, bring in some of the biggest teams in the world, Australia, the South Africas, the New Zealands, and try and create a different tournament to run alongside what is already the Six Nations, with Italy swapping out for a different team and giving that a go.
April, what are your thoughts on that and the future of Italy and the Six Nations?
Yeah, I mean, I can't really disagree. You know, Italy have been, you know, consistently pretty poor. And it's sort of, you know, in a way, the teams that are playing against Italy, it's sort of not really, are you going to win or lose? It's like, are you going to win or are you going to win with the bonus point? And in a way, that's sort of, you know, the game where every single team that's playing against Italy is trying to get the four tries to get the bonus point, because it's sort of a guaranteed win in many ways. You know, Italy in each of their games have only scored like one or two tries, and, you know, good for them for scoring the tries. And I feel like a lot of people maybe have a bit of sympathy for Italy because they don't play well in a lot of the games. And I mean, they had that sort of bit of a weird game where they were sort of, you know, exploiting a little loophole in the rules against England. And obviously that shows that they do have some like technical nous, and like they are trying their best, obviously, with the players that they have. But like Cam said, you know, there's many other teams that I don't know who you would say to bring in, but obviously Italy are like in a different level to the other teams in the Six Nations. And it's not really sort of bringing an even like competitiveness across all the games when one of the five other teams is playing Italy in every round, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. And kind of somewhere in the middle of the two extremes that we've talked about in the Six Nations so far this year is England and Scotland, of course. Both teams have won one game and lost one. Scotland were beaten narrowly by Wales in their last match, whereas England got back to winning ways with a victory against Italy. April, there have been plenty of criticisms kind of England's style of play over the last 12 months or so, to the point where, you know, some of the major pundits in the game have said England spend too much time kicking, they're too defensive. I know, you know, and you made a really good point there about how, you know, games against Italy shouldn't really be considered as turning points or massively impressive if you beat them, such as the lack of quality. But were England kind of back to, I don't want to say the best, but back to the kind of England that we've come to expect under Eddie Jones and England that you like to see as a fan last weekend?
Yeah, I think you wouldn't say they were at their best, but it was definitely better. And obviously, like, you do have to take it, you know, not as highly as other games because it was only against Italy, but at least it's like a bit of momentum for them and a bit more confidence from the fans in the fact that England did do a good showing against Italy, and they did get the four tries and the bonus point, which is kind of the most important thing because, you know, the competitiveness of that game, England were able to show they could play well at least, but it's not necessarily as important in terms of the rest of the competition. I'm not sure if England will be able to win the Six Nations, but if they do, I mean, it's not really going to be dependent on the game from this weekend.
And Cam, what are your thoughts on England's start to this tournament then?
Honestly, I think we've been really, really poor. I think the transition, our actions around the ruck have been quite indisciplined. I'm struggling to see us beating Wales. And obviously, we've already lost to Scotland. I struggle again with Ireland at full strength, assuming they don't go down to 40 men again. I see Ireland beating us. I think there just needs to be something. The problem as well with this England team, I think, is that the consistency is hard to get because a lot of these players have not played together before. And I know that could be said for a lot of the national teams. But before, I think, going into a tournament like the Six Nations, and this has happened because of COVID and everything like that, and trying to rotate the squad and test new players, we haven't got a consistent starting lineup. And I think in the previous years, you'd look at a team and be able to pick 11, 12 of those players with a couple of rotations. This year, it's almost completely different, where you have five or six nailed on starters and the rest don't really pick themselves. So I think it's a time of transition for England. It's a great time to potentially bring in new players, younger stars as well, give them some experience and then just see what happens. I don't think the expectations should be too high on England. They always are and they always will be. But, you know, I'd like to see how we go. And I think taking three wins would be acceptable in this tournament, considering the strength of some of the other nations.
Final point then about the Six Nations. Obviously, there are no matches taking place this weekend, but Match Day 3 is coming up very shortly. It will be upon us very shortly. Who is the favourite for this tournament, would you say then, guys? Is it too early to say, or has one outstanding candidate stood out at this point in the tournament? April, I'll turn to you first.
Well, I'd say France are possibly, you know, they've won both their games so far and they have looked quite good in both of them. But I would also say Scotland are looking a lot stronger than they used to. You know, they lost one of the games, but they did beat England. And, you know, we were just saying about England not being too great this year. But, you know, Scotland have definitely improved a lot from the previous years. And I think, you know, they have a chance. I mean, the game you said on next weekend, it is France against Scotland. I think the winner of that game is going to be able to really move forward and, you know, going into the final few weeks, look like they have a good chance of winning.
Cam, do you agree with that?
Completely agree. I can't see, I mean, I can't, with Wales having won two games, I can't take that into consideration at all, because they've got the experience in that squad to be able to win tight games like they did against Scotland. But for me, if Scotland hadn't got the red card in that game, I don't think Wales would have won that. And it came down to a tap tackle in the 80th minute for Scotland not to get one last chance. For me, it's Scotland or France. I think it's now France's to lose. Again, I think they've been, over the last 2 years, probably the most consistent in terms of the level which they play. And some of the players in the centre positions are really, really exciting, especially with their two wingers as well. I can't see anyone but France winning it at the minute, although I'd love Scotland to take it to the line with them.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting, the dynamic of this particular tournament. France have been impressive so far, so have Scotland, but you never know. Could England take confidence from that victory against Italy and move forward from there? And of course, Wales with the unbeaten record so far, who knows where they will end up at the end of this tournament. Thank you very much for that, Cam and April. Looking forward to see where the rest of the Six Nations goes from here. Crossing from one side of the world to the other now, to Australia. We have some finalists for the Australian Open, Benji Dalal. Novak Djokovic has booked his place in the men's final. He will either play say that again, Benji. Sorry, so I don't have to.
Medvedev.
Or, and I googled this to see if I could pronounce this correctly. Stefanos Tsitsipas.
Yes.
There we go. Smashing it. The beauty of YouTube, searching on YouTube how to pronounce Stefan Tsitsipas's name, has worked well for me.
Wrong, but you shouldn't have tried again, Ned.
I shouldn't have tried again. No. I should have just left it at that, shouldn't I? But yeah, I can edit that bit out. And Naomi Osaka has booked a place in the women's final as well to face Jennifer Brady. Just a little bit, Benji, on how Djokovic, Osaka and Brady have booked their places in their respective finals.
Okay, so I'll start with Novak Djokovic. And this has been a really interesting one, considering he's been playing with injuries for a lot of it. He managed a 5-set match against Taylor Fritz, in which he eventually came out on top, but it was through suffering. He had abdominal injuries, and that's why you have to give immense credit to the sportsman that Novak Djokovic is. This is his best Grand Slam. He's won it 8 times, and I think he'll be looking to make it a 9th, and he'll be a strong favourite. However, he has spent a lot of time on court, given that I think he managed to beat Aslan Karatsev, who's not even in the top 100, so he's another player that deserves huge credit for where he got to. I don't even know his ranking, and he's 27 years old, but like that's an unbelievable achievement for him. But Djokovic beat him in straight sets, and only in Djokovic's first round game did he also manage to get a straight sets victory. Otherwise, he's gone into four sets with Milos Raonic, Alexander Zverev and Francis TFO. And he has played quite a bit of tennis. And also, okay, so yeah, but I still overwhelmingly think that Djokovic is the favorite. This is his surface, and although you have to consider the injuries, it's difficult right now. Anyway, Naomi Osaka, she just beat Serena Williams, so and she's number three seed in this, and I think she's a strong favorite to beat Jennifer Brady, who's done exceptionally well in this tournament as number 22 seed, I think. And yeah, Osaka's probably been one of the most consistent female tennis players in the last few years, and she really made a name for herself, I think, when she beat Serena Williams in that US Open final. You remember the controversy when Serena Williams famously shouted at the umpire. But yeah, it's not to say that I don't think Brady has a chance. I think she's played great tennis, but I would be backing Naomi Osaka to win that Grand Slam.
On the subject of Serena Williams' defeat to Osaka in the semi-final, Benji, she left a post-match press conference in tears, saying, "If I ever say farewell, I wouldn't tell anyone." And it's led to a lot of journalists and ex-professionals to suggest that this might be the last that we see of Serena Williams. Do you get that impression? And also, kind of on a wider point, the fact Osaka has beaten Williams, does it suggest that there's a bit of a changing of the guard almost in women's tennis now, and Osaka is becoming the dominant force?
Definitely, and I think it first started when Naomi Osaka beat Serena Williams in that US Open final. And ever since then, Serena Williams has really struggled to win Grand Slams. She hasn't. And the only reason why I can say, even at the age of 39, and turning 40 this year, why she can stay in the sport is because she has 23 Grand Slams to her name. Margaret Court has 24, which is the most anyone's ever won. And I don't know, tennis players, a lot of the time will claim, I'm not in it for that. Nadal obviously always says, I'm not looking to overtake Federer, but I think he is. So I think that would be the only thing keeping Serena Williams in. But I do think she will struggle to get that ultimately, because Naomi Osaka has been dominating, and even without Osaka, Williams is past her prime, and I don't know myself whether she can win another Grand Slam. But all I can say is it's really good that she's getting to the semi-finals, so she's still a fierce competitor.
You hinted at your predictions for the finals, Benji. So I won't ask you about that again. The last question that I will ask, though, is on the last Sports Center podcast we recorded, we touched upon the kind of controversies as regards to quarantine that the players had to go through ahead of the tournament. The fact that they were all in this hotel environment, some had complained, others, you know, showed very little sympathy to the tennis players. And it had caused real kind of debates, not only within the tennis community, but politically as well. Do you think the quality of the tournament has been hindered at all by that, or has it still been of the standard you would expect of Australian Opens of the past?
Well, I still think it's been a great tournament, perhaps. I mean, I mean, Karatsev managed to get to the semi-finals, and judging by his ranking, I definitely think he was in that accommodation in it wasn't Adelaide, I think it was Melbourne, the one essentially where you had smaller rooms and what people were complaining about. So for that achievement to have been attained by someone who's not even in the top 100 to get to the semi-finals, knock out Grigor Dimitrov, I think that's phenomenal. And I don't know. I think similar things have happened in this Australian Open than that have happened in previous years, like Nadal getting knocked out in the quarterfinals. He did so last year to Dominic Thiem. And Dominic Thiem would have been in the better accommodation, arguably. He got knocked out quite early on in the fourth round by Grigor Dimitrov. He'd be disappointed at that. But yeah, Nadal, I think there's another thing. There has been quite a few walkovers. I guess there's been more injuries. And Nadal won't be happy as well that he wasn't able to bring Carlos Moya, his trainer, there. But it's difficult. But as to the predictions for the men's final, I mean, you have the other semi-final between Daniel Medvedev and Stefanos Tsitsipas. And that's a tricky one. It could go either way. It's number four versus number five. And Medvedev has only dropped one set until now. And Tsitsipas, he has been through 2 5-set matches against Nadal. And he, although he managed to get a walkover over Berrettini, the Italian tennis player. So, like, I mean, I don't know how it works out in terms of time they've spent on court. If I had to predict to who'd win, I'd say Daniel Medvedev. And that's because I think he's come closer to pushing the big three who have dominated. Well, I wouldn't say Federer has. I'd say Nadal and Djokovic have, rather. Like, he's come close. Obviously, that US Open final, which I always find myself going on about on the Sports Center, in which he pushed Nadal to 5 sets, being 2 sets down. He really impressed me then. And he won that Nito ATP final against the best tennis players. So I think Medvedev will edge this. And if I do think he stands a chance against Djokovic. Obviously, Djokovic on an Australian Open court is a very scary prospect. On any court, he's a very scary prospect. It's not like Nadal on the French Open court. I think he is beatable. And if he's playing with these injuries, maybe this could be the year we see Novak Djokovic lose an Australian Open final.
Potentially, Benji, potentially. Big thank you for taking us through that. And most importantly, for your outstanding pronunciations of names that I couldn't get quite right. So thank you very much for that. From the Australian Open to the Welsh Open then, the world of snooker continues to move on. The tournament is well underway at the minute, a tournament that has been part of snooker since 1992. John Higgins, the most successful player in the tournament's history. We're 3 days away from the final, Reese. Our resident snooker expert here on Euro Sport. We're just moving into the last 16. Ronnie O'Sullivan booked his place in the last 16 this afternoon. Any major headlines from the opening days of this tournament?
Well, even before a cue ball was knocked, there was the big news that this one is actually not being played in Milton Keynes.
Yes, I see.
It's being played at Celtic Manor, actually in Wales. So obviously we've recently had the German Masters, which was played in Milton Keynes. And obviously we had all the other home nations tournaments, which have been played in Milton Keynes. But this one is actually being played in Wales, which is a big headline. And it's only the second snooker tournament to be played outside of the Marshall Arena since lockdown one. And the only one apart from that not to be played in Milton Keynes was the Worlds at the Crucible last August. And that obviously fast approaches now as well. But yeah, that's a big story. So it's good to see that they're managing to sort of get to other places. I'm sure Milton Keynes is becoming a sort of second home for a lot of the players. But this Welsh Open that we're in now is the second in a row of sort of Bet Victor sponsored tournaments, and then whoever gets the most prize money from these Bet Victor sponsored tournaments gets another 150 grand as well, which is like the Bet Victor Cup, if you like. And sort of the front runners for that at the moment in terms of the overall Bet Victor, I can't believe how many times I said Bet Victor in one sentence, but yeah, the front runners for that are Mark Selby, but Judd Trump is right at the top at the moment. And in the last tournament, just before this one, Mark Selby missed a big chance to overtake Judd Trump in these rankings. So in the last tournament, which was obviously played in Milton Keynes, surprise, surprise, was the Snooker Shootout, which is a wild tournament, which no top 16 player has ever won, because each match is only one frame. So it's a bit of a lottery. It's like, you know, if to use a football analogy, it's like every round is like a penalty shootout. So it's sort of like anything can happen. And Mark Selby got to the final, $50,000 at stake. And had he won, he would have overtaken Judd Trump in the Bet Victor rankings. But he was beaten by world number 49, Ryan Day. But like I say, it was only one frame. So, you know, anything could have happened. And unfortunately for Mark Selby, he lost. So he'll be desperate to try and win this one, the Welsh Open now. He's still in it. So's Judd. Ronnie's won his last two matches in straight frames. I think those three are the front runners at the moment. John Higgins won an absolute thriller last night. You know, as the tournament's most successful player, John Higgins had a fantastic match last night against Ben Williston, which went down to a final frame decider. And John Higgins was 3-1 up, got pegged back by the Leicester man, but rallied to win the final frame. But yeah, no, it'd be super bold of me to make a prediction as to who's going to win at the moment. But I think John Higgins is in action right now as we record, and he's currently losing. So that's quite exciting. But yeah, I think Ronnie just seems to be in cracking form at the moment. He sort of had a Eurosport presenter derby with Jimmy White the other day. They're both, when Eurosport covered the snooker, they often get Ronnie and Jimmy White to, you know, be pundits. And they locked horns and Ronnie won that comfortably against another snooker legend in Jimmy White. So Ronnie looks in very good form. But Judd, he's obviously missed a lot of snooker. Couldn't play in the tournament before the snooker shootout, and then decided not to take part in the snooker shootout. A lot of top 16 players decide to give it a miss because it's such a lottery and it's unlikely that they'll win it. For instance, like an amateur made the semi-finals this year in that as well. So another shot there. So he bowed out. So he hasn't played a lot of snooker at the moment, but whenever he plays, he's still the favourite because he's literally just unbelievable. But Mark Selby will be super motivated as well. So I think he's a danger to watch out for. And before his final loss to Ryan Day in that snooker shootout, he had won his last 11 ranking finals. So, yeah, if he had actually won that one against Ryan Day, he'd have broken Stephen Hendry's record of ranking final wins in a row. So if Mark Selby reaches the final, I'd fully back him because I feel like that final loss that he had to Ryan Day, that, like, I wouldn't really count that, you know, it's a bit of a lottery. So if Mark Selby reached the final, I'll fully back in, but it's getting there. But Judd and Ronnie look very good as well. So one of those three, I reckon, will win. But no doubt when we record our next Sports Centre, I'll be looking very silly after someone else's won. But yeah, that's the lowdown for you there, James.
Like you say, Reese, I mean, it's difficult probably to make a precise and you know, considered a prediction as to who's going to win just yet, because it is still very early days in the tournament. One question I did want to ask you, though, is John Higgins is, of course, the most successful player in the Welsh Open's history. Why is it that certain snooker players seem to do better in certain tournaments than others? Is it something to do about the environment in which they play? Do you think John Higgins just gets into a bit of a rhythm when he comes to the Welsh Open and knows what to expect from it? Or is it just coincidence that at that time in that tournament, at that time of year, they're able to excel? What do you think is the main factor behind that?
That's a very good question. I was waiting for that. Yeah, that's a very good question, because I suppose certain tournaments always happen at the same time of year. Obviously it's been slightly different this season with COVID and whatnot. You know, like with the World Championships, the last one's being played in August, but they're normally played in April. So, you know, if Ronnie doesn't hold on to the worlds, then he'd have had the shortest time as champion. But you know how it is. But maybe John's just very good in February. Maybe that's because I feel like a lot of players come back into it in January and they're a bit off the pace, not quite playing their best. And then maybe by the time it hits February, they're a bit more with it. And I feel like that was the case with John, although he was obviously very good in the Masters where he reached the final and lost to a very, very good and very young Yan Bintao, which we discussed before as well. So I think he's just getting into his stride. But yeah, at the time we're recording, I think he's losing, although I haven't checked in about 10 minutes, so it could have all changed. But yeah, it's a weird one. And also, I suppose, his longevity as well. He's been a pro since 1992. So he's been a pro as long as the Welsh Open has been on the circuit as well. So I think, you know, he's won it the most, but he has been around for a lot of time. So that means he's been able to take part in a lot of them. So I think that's a big contributing factor as well.
Yeah, it's a very, very interesting one. And I'll be fascinated to see if John Higgins can continue his great form in the Welsh Open. Like Rhys said, a lot of the usual suspects in the world of snooker are still knocking about in this tournament. So who knows who is going to come out on top in the next few days. Thank you very much for that, Rhys. We have come to the end of this week's Sports Centre. Despite saying to the panel beforehand that I didn't have a question to ask to conclude this week's episode, I have managed to think of one as the programme has unfolded. So it is a bit impromptu. It is going to test the panel's off the cuff, abilities here. I don't know if you saw this week, but football referee Darren Drysdale got in a little bit of bother for squaring up to an Ipswich Town footballer, Alan Judge, during their game. So the question is, it's quite simple. In all the sports that we support, we watch, and we're great fans of, who is your favourite referee, stroke umpire, stroke whatever your sports equivalent referee is? It's a big question. Benjamin Dalal, I'm going to turn to you first.
Tennis umpires?
Yeah, you can take a tennis umpire.
I mean, if I had to say my favourite football referee, I'd say Anthony Taylor, because we won two FA Cups under him.
Okay.
And he sent off Victor Moses for diving correctly. And he sent off Mateo Kovacic, which was absolute scenes. So I'd have to go for Anthony Taylor, the bald-headed hero.
Right. Anthony Taylor is Benji's choice. Cam?
I'm so tempted to say Mike Dean, although I really don't want to. No, he can't be. When he's celebrating a Spurs goal, I can't be choosing that, can I? I'm actually going to go for rugby, and I'm definitely going to pick Nigel Owens.
Mm-hmm.
Absolute hero. Love the man. Don't think there's a straighter talker. Straighter talker? That's not even a word, is it? He's such a straight talker, and everyone in rugby loves him. So I don't think I can do him justice enough, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. Nigel Owens, a massive name in the world of rugby, probably as big a name as any rugby union player. And he's a referee, which speaks volumes about him. April?
I literally don't have anyone. I mean, in the NFL, there's like a team of like 8 refs that all work together.
Right.
And so I don't really know many names apart from Sarah Thomas, who's the first woman ref. And I just follow her story because she's a breaking the barriers to like officiate as a woman, but I don't really know many other refs. Sorry.
No. Sarah Thomas is a very, very good shout, because that was a massive appointment in the history of the NFL, the first female referee. So definitely a great shout. Rhys?
Yeah, Nigel Owens is a great shout by Cam, by the way, and I was going to shout him as well. But I suppose I've lived with a couple of refs. You know, calling back to the times when I was living amongst the snooker players, which I never mentioned. Rob Spencer is a snooker ref. He's a really, really top bloke. And Tatiana Williston, who's actually married to one of the snooker players on the circuit, Ben, who I referred to earlier. I remember the first tournament I worked at, they had to stay in different rooms, the two of them, because they arrived at different times. Obviously, had to get tests and whatnot at different times. And we dropped off breakfast outside their rooms, like, you know, the guest rooms and whatnot. And every morning, we'd
drop off the, you know, Tatiana's breakfast, and then like 2 seconds later we'd see Ben sneaking out of their room like they were 16, even though they're married. It was so funny. But yeah, they're really nice. They're really cute, them too. So Tatiana Williston or Rob Spencer, I'll say.
Good shouts from Reese and good shouts from the panel as a whole. The referee that I was going to go for, well, there's not many in the world of professional sport that I'm that keen of, but I am going to give a big shout out to Mick, who was the referee at my local leisure leagues. 2 years ago, I scored my one and only goal for PK Blinders, which came from a pass which was clearly above head height. We were losing 8-0 at the time, but Mick let us get away with it and allowed me to score my first goal for the club. So Mick is the referee that I go for. That is it. Thank you very much for listening to this week's episode of the Sports Centre. Big thanks to Benji, Reese, Cam and April for joining me on tonight's show. Don't forget, there's plenty going on in the world of cricket at the minute. England versus India. It's 1-1 in the series. To hear more about that, head to Sticky Wicket. The Super Bowl, it's nearly 2 weeks since that took place. Listen to April and Dom's thoughts about that via Touchdown. And of course, join the URN sport team on Saturday night for the Premier League show at home, the watch-along of a little old fixture known as the Merseyside Derby between Liverpool and Everton. But yes, thank you very much for listening. The Sports Centre will return very shortly, and enjoy the world of sport that's out there at the minute.